Welcome to Crossbody Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
This week, Japanuary rolls on with our second of three episodes focused just on Japanese wrestlers. This time, we look at a stalwart of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Somebody who was there for a long time.
The last of the original three musketeers that we're covering on this podcast.
Masahiro Chono. Very exciting.
Yes, super exciting. We've, like I mentioned, the last of the three that we've covered on this podcast previously, we've already done the Great Muta / Kaiji Muto.
Yep.
And we've also already done, I'm forgetting his first name, Shinya Hashimoto.
Yes.
We did him last year for Japanuary. So this year, we're closing out the circle, the triad, I should say, with Masahiro Chono.
On this show, we cover a wrestler through five of their most important matches, or five matches we can find on the internet. And so we are looking at a bunch of different matches from Chono's career. We'll talk about them. We'll have some laughs. We'll have a good time. Wherever you are listening to the podcast, rate 5 stars. Helps us out tremendously as we continue to grow. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, hello. It's good to see you. How many fingers am I holding up? Hit subscribe. Isn't that fun? We're on the road to 200. We're trying to get there before WrestleMania, which is less than 3 months away from our recording. We will be at WrestleMania. We will be at Stand and Deliver. We will be at a bunch of other wrestling events that weekend. We will be making lots of content. So hit subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on all of our socials, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. That's enough of the housekeeping. If you had to describe Chono in a sentence, what would you say to people?
Goatee.
You don't even need extra words. Just one word, yeah. Goatee.
It's one word, goatee. I don't know. Have you ever seen someone with a goatee who, aside from Wheeler Yuta, have you ever seen someone with a goatee that was just like, damn, that dude's going to punch me and it's going to hurt?
I mean, Stone Cold.
Aside from Wheeler Yuta, every single person with a goatee looks like they're just going to rock your world with a punch.
Oh, that's what you mean. Yes. Yeah. Especially wrestling. Jim Neidhart. Steve Austin. Yeah. Goatees are scary.
Yeah.
The scariest of the facial hairs.
Although I think Wheeler actually grew out his whole beard, so I don't think he counts anymore.
The least... Like, if I see someone with a goatee, it's the least likely I am to go talk to somebody. I'm more likely to talk to someone with a mustache than a goatee.
Any sort of facial hair... First off, I'm not likely to talk to anybody. But any sort of facial hair... Aside from a goatee, you'll probably get me to open up to you. If you talk to me with a goatee, I'm going to be like, I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah, I'm not engaging. Like, yeah, I can't do it.
I'm immediately just apologizing.
And that's because of people like Chono. So Chono, I wouldn't describe him as a big boy, but like a beefy guy, 6'1", 238 listed.
Yeah, I mean, he is, okay, as a modern day kind of example, a way that I would describe him is, I literally just had the name in my head, Shingo Takagi from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Who's a little older. Shingo, I think, is probably around 40 at this point. But, you know, he's the same exact kind of build, 6 feet, 6'1", barrel chested. You know,
also has a goatee.
Also has a goatee. He's got hair, though, or a long hair, though. And then, you know, he's a striker, but he's just also like an incredible wrestler. He could do so many other things in the ring. And I don't think it's a like-for-like comp as far as the in-ring ability goes, because I do think that Shingo is a better worker.
But I do think really, that, truly different eras of their primes.
Yes, but I do think that as far as like, you know, who's the first person that came to my mind when I thought of Chono? It really was Shingo Takagi.
That, I think, is fair.
A former IWGP World Heavyweight Champion.
Just like Masahiro Chono, who debuted in 1984 against Kaiji Muto in a New Japan Wrestling event in Saitama, Japan. In 1987, he defeated Shinya Hashimoto to win the Young Lions Cup. So these three intertwined their whole career. It's all together. The three Musketeers, they're always going to be together. In April of 89, he took part in the IWGP Heavyweight Championship Tournament held at New Japan's very first show at the Tokyo Dome, which we have covered before, and lost to the eventual winner of the tournament, a man we've covered multiple times. Thank you, Haas Month, Big Van Vader.
Ooh.
That's a good match. He left.
Big boy, too.
Did some excursion. He came back in October of 89 and reinvented himself. He debuted a signature move against Matt Bourne is actually who he debuted his STF against, which I thought was really interesting.
Wow.
It's like when we learned that Joey Abs took the first ever Stone Cold Stunner.
I'm sorry, you've probably told me that before, but you just telling me that right now just shocked me to my core.
During our Stone Cold Steve Austin three-parter, I found out through Wikipedia that the first ever Stone Cold Stunner on TV, like WWE TV, was to Joey Abs. Which feels wrong.
It does feel wrong.
Because I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he was in the Mean Street Posse area yet, or if he was just a jobber at that point.
Or was he still doing? Was Austin still doing the first version of the Stunner by that point, where he just kind of like held him there for a little bit?
I don't remember. But you know, early on, Muto or Chono had some success. He actually won the IWGP Tag Team Championships with Muto. And defeated, on December 26th, 1990, defeated his mentor, Lou Thesz. Thesz came out of retirement for one match and put over Chono, which I find very interesting.
Chono, I like that.
Chono would then go on into the first ever 1991, the first ever G1 Climax. And that is where our first match takes place. It's the first ever G1 Climax Finals. It is, of course, Chono versus Muto. Now, some historians and people who know the history of New Japan are going to be very confused. I said this is the first ever G1 Climax. Can you explain how it's different in 91 compared to the years past? Do you remember what the difference is?
No.
This is the first one that was called the G1. Yeah. But also was the first time that it was not, they took a break. They didn't do it in 1990, and then they had settled on the round robin format in 91. Before, there had been some that were like four blocks, and before that there were some that were like just an actual tournament the whole way. But then it goes back. It's very confusing. I don't know why. Okay, yeah. They say that the G1 is just 1991 on. But
concerned that was concerning to me, so I was confused by that. No, you're right. So it was just, yeah, like a, they basically had no real format for it.
I guess it was the 91 was the, so they do have more tournament style after 91. 91 was the first year they called it the G1. And yeah, Before that it had a variety of other names. It was the World Cup tournament. It was the IWGP League, but this is the first one with the G1 branding. They would go back and forth between round robin and tournament style, but this one was round robin style.
Yeah.
So it's just the name. It's just the namesake. It's like how a couple years ago was the first ever Washington Commander series. We do know that the other one existed, but that was the first year of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's.
Do you know where the G1 gets its name?
No, actually.
Horse racing.
Like the plane?
Horse racing. Geez. G1 is the highest level of thoroughbred and standardbred stakes racing in many countries, and so they named it after horse racing because they are the
fucking Inoki.
Oh, it was Saiji Sakaguchi who named it, not Inoki.
Oh my God, even worse.
Yeah, a thing from New Japan history that wasn't Inoki. Very surprising.
While he was alive, too. It's crazy.
This is a very interesting match to me because this is Kaiji Muto before the Muta gimmick.
This is interesting to me for a lot of reasons.
Also Chono before the Yakuza gimmick. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
It's Chono's a babyface, which is always weird to me because I like never see him as a babyface.
He was a top heel for years.
We'll get to it. Yeah. Not as much really, because it's really hard to find Yakuza gimmick Chono.
Yeah, he was there. We promise. It just was hard to find.
Chono, we'll get to it later. Anyways, this match is interesting for a lot of reasons. It's kind of like it's like watching a Shinsuke Nakamura match before he went on excursion to Mexico and became like the flamboyant rock star kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, like seeing him against like Tanahashi circa like 2007, 2006, that range. It's just like, oh yeah, these are two guys. They're really good, but that's not them. Like, that's not the them that we know.
Yeah.
You know? So it's interesting. Like, it's very clearly just two really talented guys going at it. And I know why these two were in the final. They're the two young guys. I don't know if they've been anointed as the Three Musketeers yet by this point. It might be 92 or somewhere around that range if that happens. But yeah, these guys go out there. honestly, Kaiji Muto looks exactly the same, like as like the Muta gimmick, just no face paint, pretty much.
I would like to point out that at the very beginning of the match, for some reason, Muto looks like afraid. His posture is super off. I think he's trying to like puff up to look like intimidating, but he's too far forward, so he looks like I'm doing like an Igor right now on if you're watching on YouTube. Like I'm like, yes, doctor. Like he looks a little too far back. Like he's kind of like, I don't know. And his eyebrows are really high, and he's kind of like afraid looking. Meanwhile, Chono just stone faced. Just doesn't care.
Yeah, he's the same guy always. Heel, you know this, baby face. It's just Chono.
You know what this reminds me of? There's a clip going around recently. It was a game where the two starting pitchers were supposed to be Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson, and both. Both were scratched, and so they're like, oh well, there's two young upstarts instead who are gonna pitch, and the two young upstarts who were making, like, you know, not first career but like maybe first career.
Was this like 2007?
Do you remember who the two are?
Was it like Max Scherzer and someone else?
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, let's see what these young guys can do. And it's like, oh, they're fucking amazing.
Yeah.
That's kind of how
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really is how this feels. Like, it's just really, don't get me wrong. Like, we could have found matches.
They're in the G1 final. So, like, they're.
Yeah, this is also like 7 years into their careers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they had gone on excursion and come back by this point and all that jazz.
They just aren't who we know they will be.
Yeah, they aren't. They're like Gohan versus Cell, not Gohan later on.
Way to just bring the nerds back in. I appreciate you. I would say, like, again, this is another one of those episodes where if we go beat by beat through a match, it's going to be absurd. The thing that really drew me in this match, this is one of my favorite matches this week. It's not my recommendation, but it is one of my favorites. The mat work really early is unbelievably fun. And yes. I am not a mat work person. We have established that. You're the mat work person. I'm not. This kept my attention. So I will give them a lot of credit.
The strength was so fun.
Yeah, it was really good.
Because they, like, were flipping over each other. Like, Chono kind of, like gets a slam, almost, kind of.
Yeah,
like,
he does. It's very amateur wrestling-ish.
They keep the grips on, but he, like, kind of flips Muto over for a slam. And it's really cool. Muto does his extra as hell elbow drop, like, standing elbow drop, which I love. I love it every time. He ends up missing the handspring back elbow. Chono hits a back suplex off of it. Just everyone. Actually, I can't even say you take a shot every time Chono hits a back suplex because you would die by the
you
third
would die.
Match. But like, just someone keep a running tally of how many back suplexes. There's one.
The big move. So like in the middle of the match, the big move that caught my attention again is just, Muto's just like cattle mutilation. I was like, oh, I know that. That's a great move.
That move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chono hits a gnarly boot to the face, which will also be a trend of his. It's just kicking people in the face.
I don't know anyone under 6'4 who hits as good of a big boot as Masahiro Chono.
Yeah.
For and I understand some of his opponents also small, but he can get his boot up and connect. And he has like, he plants and pushes when he does the boot.
Yeah, because like, he twists like as he makes contact. So it's
that's what makes it better is that. A lot of guys, they just put, like, obviously some big guys don't have the mobility. They just put their boot up and a guy runs into it. His is like a plant and push. Like, he's really fucking kicking people.
Yeah, honestly, I do not want to take those. Chono hits a power driver. He hits a second one, which honestly caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
Then he went for a submission, which it kind of looked like a knee bar of kind. Muto slips out of the ring, though.
And then Muto reverses a pile driver attempt on the outside into a back body drop. Muto then hits a pile driver in the crowd right onto the concrete. And I was like, oh, that's bad boy behavior. Really, you really are the heel, Muto.
This is G1.
This is G1.
This is the G1 final, and we're busting out pile drivers on concrete floors.
It's true. Let's talk about the end stretch of the match, because very similar to what I think people think of with, I would say, the New Japan style in general. Lots of buildup, lots of work, some spots in the middle, and then just a rapid fire, crazy ending.
Pretty much, yeah. We get a Gotch style power driver for a near fall, dragon suplex with a bridge for a near fall because Chono's foot was on the ropes.
Yeah, Muto flipped him over too hard, essentially.
The Neville Seth
Rollins. The Neville Rollins spot, yeah.
Yeah. Muto misses a moonsault. Chono gets an STF on, which is just the most beautiful STF out there.
Like John Cena, just watch some New Japan. Just you'll be able to see how to do it. I will say that the other
cranks it too.
The other thing I like about pretty much every time Chono locks in the STF is that immediately once his opponent's legs are wrapped the way that it is for an STF, they start to scurry to the ropes because they know what's coming. They don't just let it happen.
Yeah.
They're very much like panic mode. If I get caught in this, I'm fucked.
Yeah. Muto puts on an octopus. Chono just falls to get out of it, which is a move. Like, literally just falls forward, or I think it's backward.
Yeah.
He falls in one direction and the hold breaks because how do you keep that on?
It's actually brilliant. That's how that move should be countered all the time.
Yeah, literally. Muto hits a moonsault, but Chono gets his knees up. And then finally, stack powerbomb. 1-2-3, Masahiro Chono wins the match. He is the first ever G1 winner.
He then would also, I believe, win the tournament in 92. So he won the first two G1 climaxes, if I'm correct.
I mean, he's Mr. G1. I think he's won five of them.
He's won five. He's Mr. August. And this one was the tournament style, where also he wins the NWA World Heavyweight Championship by winning the tournament. Yeah.
Sorry, what?
And it's funny because
throwing that out there.
If you look at his path to the finals and the people he faced, it's four names that all Western wrestling fans will know. First round, sexy Barry Windham. Problems there. Round two, Steve Austin. Round three, Kaiji Muto. And in the finals, Rick Rude.
Oh.
Yeah, that's like one of Rick Rude's best matches. I remember looking up is him versus Chono in the finals of that tournament. So
that is a hell of a stretch for matches, too.
That is. Chono would actually, and this is, again, some very sad irony, I think. Chono suffered a serious neck injury from a botched sit-down tombstone piledriver on September 23rd, 92, defending the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Steve Austin. So Chono got a neck problem against Steve Austin in 92, which, of course, is a forerunner to things that would happen to Austin. On January 4th, he lost the NWA World title to IWGP Heavyweight Champion The Great Muta in a title versus title match. We then move to April of 93 for our second match. It's Chono teaming up with Shinya Hashimoto against The Great Muta, but not really. It's just Kaiji Muto here and Hiroshi Hase.
Who I fucking love. I love Hiroshi Hase. I still remember him from the Muto stuff and the Hashimoto stuff. He's really fun.
Hase has a glorious mustache, and Muto has the inability to take off his shirt. Did you see that in the opening? He can't get his fucking shirt off.
Can't get it off.
It's the same way, like, I've seen some clips before on TikTok where it's like guys have a certain way they take their shirts off and like girls can't do it.
How do like, you take your shirt off?
Oh, I mean, I'm not gonna do it on the pod. I don't need that in the internet.
No, but like
you just
I just do this.
Yeah, like I do this, but there's the way where you do like the full pull up from the bottom and people like some people can't do it. Yeah. I think it's a movie thing. I think people only do that in the movies. Like, it's the way that Ryan Gosling takes his shirt off in Crazy Stupid Love.
My thing is, if I do it that way, then my shirt's inside out. What if I want to put the shirt back on?
Well, that depends. If you're just going to wash it, you could just throw it in the laundry because it should go inside out in the laundry.
Well, yeah, but if I'm like, I don't know. What if I'm just like, what if it's not the laundry time? I want to put that back on.
Then you do it the regular way.
Like, I'm just always going to do it the regular way, personally speaking.
But yeah, Muto has no fucking idea how to take a shirt off. It takes him a while.
It's like, is it by the sleeve? Listen, anything's better than how John Cena takes the shirt off. My man does takes the shirt off in three parts. Well, he takes his arm out, and then he's got to reach down, and then he's got to pull, and then
It's really weird. I actually had never thought about that. It's incredibly weird how he takes the shirt off.
Anyways, before the match starts, Hase and Muto are doing sexy poses.
They're very much like for the benefit of flash photography. Like they're mugging.
They're getting it.
Also, I was so glad that you put a match with Hashimoto on the list because Hashimoto is one of my favorite big boys I've ever learned about from this podcast.
Big boy.
If there's like a top five of wrestlers I've discovered through doing this pod, like Hashimoto is on that top five without question.
Number one is Ishii, as we all know.
Well, That's my guy. That's why he has the Stone Pitbull Award named after him. You should go and listen to our year-end awards for 2023. The Workies.
A great name. Sorry, working title.
Always a working title.
Jono has like a sort of explosion to him when he puts on submission holds. Doesn't matter what it is. It could be the STF. Yeah. It could be like it could even be just be a headlock. He has this sort of like aggressive, like kind of like I said, explosion to him, mm-hmm. that I like really like.
There is something very legitimate about all of the things Chono does in the ring, which I appreciate.
It's because of the goatee, man. I'm telling you,
you're not wrong.
Everything about him goes back to the goatee. He is just like, I see a man that burrow chested with a goatee, I'm walking the other way. There is nothing good that can happen to me in a situation where I am going in the direction that that individual is in.
But what if you also want to get into the Harley Davidson dealership? What then?
I'll go to another one. What do you mean it's 500 miles away?
I'll walk. Early on, a lot of trade. Like, it's very much trading. There's nobody really has the advantage for long. The biggest thing in terms of getting advantage, Hashimoto at one point is going for a corner crescent kick. And I think it's Muto who's in the corner, dodges, and Hashimoto just goes fucking ass over tea kettle to the outside. It's so good. Because Hashimoto has at this point hit a couple of those crescent kicks, and they look really nice. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'll just go for one in the corner. And he just sails.
Sail. My favorite thing that Hashimoto does in this entire match, honestly, it might be my favorite thing that happens in any of these matches. At one point, he literally just runs right through Kaiji Muto.
Oh, yes.
Just runs right through him. There was no move in that other than get out the way, bitch.
Yes. In terms of the action in the ring, I really think that Chono and Hase are very much a big, like, it's kind of like a mirror. Like, they have a lot of similarities in terms of the way they move. Their movesets are not the same, but the way they move in the ring. So whenever they're in the ring, it's very interesting to see. The biggest things that are interesting to me in wrestling are two very different styles or two very similar styles. And they're very similar. And so I liked every time they matched up.
I was watching a lot of the way that Hase worked, and I was like, Jay White, you dirty, dirty boy.
Okay, I see that.
Jay White, you dirty, dirty boy. Especially at one point, Hase does a superplex, he hits a superplex on Chono, and then he does like the Uranagi that Jay White does, where it's like here, and then he does like a 180 on the way down, and he brings him down. It's super exaggerated, and just like a lot of the movement stuff, I was like, Jay White, okay, my man was watching fucking Hiroshi Hase, and just getting inspired. Like, it honestly isn't until this match that I was like, I'm seeing a lot of Jay White in this guy.
Again, the end of the match is a crazy sequence of action.
Yeah, this has so much to it that we couldn't possibly like even talk about. Not even beat for beat is out of the question. We couldn't even possibly like do a slight rundown.
Like the ending of the match, there's DDT's trade. There's a big boot by Chono, one of his beautiful ones again. Another one to Hase. He locks in STF, but Hase, like I said, just immediately scrambles to the ropes because he's like, I'm not getting caught. Not this time. Chono locks in again. Muto breaks it up. Tosses Hashimoto to the outside. Like, there's a lot happening. I love it, though.
Hase hits a Uranagi. Muto hits a side breaker. But Chono gets out of the way on the moonsault. Muto lands. And then just eats one of the most beautiful thrust kicks you'll ever see from Hashimoto.
Yep.
At one point, there's like everything's going crazy. Hase is on Hashimoto, getting him out of the ring.
They're literally brawled to the outside.
Yeah, Chono just collapses. He just collapses in exhaustion. Muto hits a moonsault. 1, 2, 3. Muto and Hase win the match.
I don't know if this is my recommendation. Like, this is maybe one of the weeks where the recommendation is the hardest to find because they're all.
It's not because
good.
They're bad.
No, they're all pretty good. I think this is my recommendation, now that I think about it harder. I think this is it.
I think this is my recommendation more so because I think that if you really want a breakdown of not only the Three Musketeers of New Japan Pro Wrestling, like the original Three Musketeers of New Japan Pro Wrestling, but also Hiroshi Hase. I think this is the match that really, like, personifies not only them, but, like, really showcases exactly what all four of those men can do and are about.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, and you get little samplers of all, it's the appetizers for each and every one of them. Like, over here, we've got your Chono. He's your like, wings. Over here, we've got your potato bites. That's Hase. Got some mozzarella sticks over here. That's Muto. And then finally, you're ending off with a fucking burger, or your, I guess, sliders, if we're doing appetizers. And that's Hashimoto.
I do love a good burger. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we have NWO Japan and an exploding barbed wire death match. Back from the break, August 94, Chono wins his third G1 Climax tournament, defeating Power Warrior in the finals. Great name, not the Ultimate Warrior. It's Kensuke Sasaki. It's not Jim Hellwig. A short time after his third G1 win is that's where Chono turns heel. And the reason was he was angered that Power Warrior received an IWGP Heavyweight Championship match before him, because he, even though he won the tournament, and changed him into the Yakuza gimmick that we would essentially know for the rest of his career. He had the sunglasses, he became more menacing, he wore black coats, he wore black tights, and he partnered with Hiroshi Tenzen and Hiro Saito as Team Wolf, which provided the foundation for New Japan's NWO Japan. So he was the leader of the NWO Japan stable and would actually go to America and go to WCW in the 90s. And so that's where we go. It is December 16th, 1996. It's Nitro. And Chono is here with his manager slash translator, Sonny Ono. And they're going to get interviewed by Mean Gene.
The GOAT.
Commentary spoils what's about to happen. Did you catch that?
Is that Bischoff?
It's Bischoff. They, so the big thing is that Chono is going to reveal during the segment that he has an NWO shirt on and turn and be the NWO. They say that he's NWO when he arrives, and they say, yeah, like, they've got a surprise, and it's like, well, then the surprise, we all knew by the end of 96, the surprise, if they said there was a surprise, was that they're joining the NWO.
Yeah. So Sonny Ono looks like a very sleazy looking man.
He's the perfect car salesman. He looks like he could sell you the fuck out of a Buick.
You haven't seen Godzilla Minus One, have you?
No, I haven't.
It's so good. Definitely watch it if you ever get the chance. But for those who are listening who have seen Godzilla Minus One, the scientist that's a part of the like crew, that looks exactly like Sonny Ono. It's uncanny.
I love Sonny Ono's mannerisms as well. Just the smile he'd have, the sunglasses, always just kind of very happy to be like, I love Sonny Ono's mannerisms. I thought he was a really effective manager for what he was supposed to be.
Now, honestly, I have no opinion of Sonny Ono because I just don't know enough about Sonny Ono.
So Gene Okerlund is here. He's on the ramp. He's interviewing Ono and Chono. But Gene clearly doesn't remember Chono's name. Did you notice that?
No, I did it, but now do you say it?
He doesn't say his name once. He says, Sonny Ono, you're here, and he's here, and goes and something else. I was like, just, like, when you're in that case, just call him Bud.
Sonny Ono says that he's basically acting as Chono's agent, and he's helping Chono negotiate with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Ono opens his shirt to reveal that he's wearing a New Japan shirt. Chono opens his trench coat and reveals that he's rocking the new NWO shirt.
Chono cuts a promo in Japanese and doesn't let Ono translate. Instead, grabs him by the shirt and tosses him. I can't believe he skipped over
ripping the shirt. Does not.
No. Good shirt material. Can't believe you skipped over the very important Jerry Maguire reference that Gene Okerlund makes.
Yeah, I guess it's Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, you're basically
very important
Sonny
Ono
Maguire.
Not knowing what the fuck that was.
He was thrilled. He's like, yes, I'm Jerry Maguire. Like, Jerry Maguire had come out, what, a couple of months before? Oh, no. Jerry Maguire had come out 3 days before this. So, shout out to Gene Okerlund for being immediately on the references. Like,
I was going to say, Jerry Maguire was 96.
Which is better than WWE in their like year delayed thing whenever they try to do a pop culture reference.
Oh, the RKO out of nowhere thing happening a year or almost 2 years after the RKO out of nowhere trend.
I was going with the spoofing of the OJ chase around LA with it, at WrestleMania 12, a couple months late.
Yeah.
This is a lot. This is a lot.
Yeah.
Jerry Maguire, a good movie.
I love Jerry Maguire. I think it's, I was going to say, I think it's Tom Cruise's best performance. It's just not, it's not even his best performance of the 90s.
No, but that's okay.
It's his best, Magnolia is, but it's up there.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Also, Cuba Gooding Jr., outstanding in that movie.
It's the best Cuba Gooding Jr. performance. Let me tell you something.
That is Snow Dogs Erasure, and I won't, I won't stand for it.
Jesus Christ. A
couple things happened in WCW for Chono. One was he had a match against Goldberg and shot on him and dislocated his shoulder.
Actually?
Yeah.
He dislocated his own shoulder.
I don't know. I didn't know how to read this. He either dislocated his own shoulder or dislocated Bill's shoulder.
Okay, what the hell does it say?
It just says Chono supposedly shot the match and dislocated his shoulder.
Oh, so he dislocated. Wait, did Goldberg? Was that a statement like Goldberg saying that?
In a match against WCW's Bill Goldberg, Chono supposedly shot the match and dislocated his shoulder.
Yeah, so Chono, I think Chono dislocated Goldberg's shoulder.
Which is very funny because people always give William Regal like a little bit of shit to be like, why did you make him look bad?
When Chono's like, he didn't.
Chono's like, I'm going to make him look like shit. Watch me get him.
Like, Regal has explicitly said, yeah, they told me to do that. And he still, to this day, says, like, yeah, they told me to do that. And I'm just going to believe him. He's not an asshole.
No, he's not. I'm very excited for William Regal to get back on our TV. I think he'll be there soon.
I think that Nick Aldis is going to eventually just end up on...
NXT?
No. On, wrestling. And I think that's going to open it up to Regal being the SmackDown general manager.
I have no problem with that. I think that's great. He can control the Authors of Pain who are back, which is we had made. I told you they'd been signed for like a year and a half. A couple of weeks
back.
Ago, and now they're back.
Karrion Kross.
Is Triple H cooking?
I don't know, but I like to think that both promotions are cooking right now because I'm also getting Hook challenging for the AEW World Championship, and that's all that matters to me.
There is nothing that makes me laugh harder than Tony Khan. Tony Khan should not have access to a phone. He's just out there fucking it up to the tempo. He does not care.
So
and
bad.
And I think it's funny because I exist and you and I both exist in what I think is the larger world of wrestling fandom where we're like, wrestling's fun. Everybody else relax. All these tribalism people who are like, WWE is the best or AEW is the best. I'm like, dude, relax. It's all wrestling. Everybody.
Exploding barbed wire death matches.
Oh, all right. Let's talk about that. So Chono comes back to Japan, has lots of success, wins the IWGP tag team titles on 6 occasions, wins the IWGP heavyweight championship in 98. And our match that we're looking at is against Atsushi Onita, who we covered last week. It is a no rope explosive barbed wire death match at New Japan Strong Style Symphony 1999. You make fun of
New
me.
Japan?
New Japan. Is that not,
Japan.
Is that not how you say it? Onita's here. He's coming out to Wild Thing. He lights a cigarette on his way to the ring and is getting pelted with garbage. I was like, this man is Oscar the Grouch in human form.
It's just like he's in all black aside from his white tank top. And it's just, he looks like such a badass. And then Chono just comes through and steals all the badassery. Because he arrives in a Hummer.
Yep.
He's rocking all black leather. Everything that he is wearing is black leather. And he's got a cigar in his mouth. He's crazy over. And I'm like, who the fuck? Like, Roman Reigns' aura could not match this.
I just said there's too much cool in one match. And then luckily it's balanced out because the referee is in a polo and ski goggles. Because it's another exploding death match. We've gone from covering no exploding death matches on this podcast to doing 2 back-to-back weeks with them. It's a lot.
Are you okay?
I mean, I didn't have to get blown up, so I'm fine.
So Onita's tank top was already torn before the match started.
This ties into your theory that he has something underneath it, that, or like there's the same tear every time.
No, I'm telling you, he's wearing the same one. Like, he just washes it or something. I swear to God.
I believe it. Like, Onita missed an opportunity. I mean, we talked about him being on a video game last week. But he missed an opportunity for more branding for, like, to do, like, laundry detergent. To be like, look at how bloody this is. And then one cold wash of Mr. Sparkle and you're all set. Like,
Mr. Sparkle. Chono avoids avoids getting like whipped into the wire in a very fun way. He's like, I'm too strong, I'm too agile,
and then just flexes on him. He's like, yeah. I was like, dude, you're still gonna blow up.
Pop the molly, I'm flooding. Chono like lightly brushes the wire, but he's also wearing like a leather vest, so he's like barely touches it. It lightly pops, but he doesn't feel any of it because he's wearing the leather vest and he's not selling it. So I'm like, oh, he wasn't supposed to touch it.
Does Chono's gear remind you of Ministry of Darkness Undertaker, or is that just me?
No, it reminds me of Ace, or what is it? Not Aces and Eights. What's the WWE one from the 90s and from the Attitude Era?
DOA.
Yeah, it reminds me of DOA.
I think it's just because his shoulders are a little pointy, and I was like, this is Ministry of Darkness Undertaker.
No, because...
Where to, Stephanie?
Undertaker wasn't wearing full leather.
He also didn't wrestle in it. Like, when he had the coat thing, he didn't wrestle in it.
Here's the thing. I don't know how people wrestle in leather. Like, fake leather where it's just glossy and it's like whatever, like, that's fine. But this looks like real leather.
I haven't worn enough leather to know how difficult it is to move around.
No, because here it's not even that. It's so fucking hot in there, and I just know it. Like, I just be rocking my leather jacket, and just the jacket alone, I'm like, oh, this is warm.
I was going to ask you, and I'm still going to ask you on the record: do you have leather pants?
No, I'm not very what is it? I'm not very diverse with my pants. It's just like jeans, khakis, and like regular dress pants.
Okay, you're not diversifying, you're not leather pantsing it up.
Should I get a pair of leather pants? Should I wear them to WrestleMania?
I don't know, are you a dad going through a divorce? I don't think you should.
Well, I am neither a dad nor married, so
I think you're fine. All right, so the first explosion that happens is not either of the wrestlers hitting the ropes, which I find very fun. Chono just whips a chair at Onita, and Onita dodges, and instead it just hits the ropes and explodes.
Yeah, it was huge. I think that might have been the biggest explosion of the match.
Oh, no, them all tumbling into the ropes that we'll get to in a second. That's the biggest explosion. But
yeah, you're right. Onita does a bulldog onto a chair. The chair that blew up. Chono gets whipped into the wire for a big pop.
Big explosion. Yeah.
Yeah. Big explosion. Also big pop from the crowd.
Big pop.
Chono puts a knee bar on. Then he just kind of gives up on it. Like after 3 seconds,
he's done. He's tired.
He's like, I don't care. Chono moves. Onita goes right into the wire. The crowd loved that one.
The crowd is waiting for Onita. Essentially, it's like The Simpsons where it's like, say the line, Bart. Like, they're just like, get exploded at sushi. We know it's happening.
Cowabunga, dude.
I can't believe you did mention that when Onita does the bulldog onto Chono, Chono is getting himself up. And out of instinct, he goes to pull himself up by the ropes that do not exist because it's barbed wire. And you see his arm go out and then it pauses. And he's like, oh, and then just like, stand straight up. He just leaves his hair there for a second, like,
That I will say, if I were a wrestler, I'd 100% grabbed. Like, there wouldn't have been a pause for me. I honestly would have grabbed it. Not even close.
Not a doubt in my mind am I accidentally grabbing the rope.
Oh, yeah.
Not a doubt in my mind. I'm like, oh, fuck, it's this again.
And I was like, fuck.
Chono's ends up in control after a slap fight because he sent Onita into the explosion. The crowd is excited when Chono low blows Onita. Like, the crowd's hyped.
The crowd does not like Onita.
Yeah, they're not in an Onita at all.
No, it's because it's like a cross promotional thing. Like, yeah, he's so like, oh, he's one of the other FMJ. Like, there's Japan the guy.
There's the tribalism thing coming back into play.
There's like a very clear, like, they are just like trying their best to get the referee involved. There's like a little bit of a holding pattern because the spot isn't ready yet between Onita and the ref. And then Chono tackles Onita. Onita grabs the ref, and the two, all three of them tumble into the wire. And there is just a big boom.
Another ref is in the ring to replace our apparently dead referee. The second ref is late to the pinfall that Chono has on Onita, and Onita kicks out because he's checking on the first dead referee. Then the best big boot that Chono hits this whole episode happens right here.
Kicks the damn head off of that motherfucker. Near fall. Another big boot. Near fall. Chono hits a Saito suplex, but Onita like keeps a headlock on, which is pretty interesting. Chono pushes him into the wire off the headlock. They fail to make a 10 count, both of them, and draw.
It's a draw.
It's a draw.
Which is weird. Very weird.
Chono yells into the mic. I thought they were going to restart the match. They just kind of walked out.
Yeah. Chono leaves the ring. Onita joins him on the ramp, puts Onita's jacket on him. So there's like a show of respect, but kind of flat to have them end with a double can't answer the 10 count. I thought that was kind of weird.
I didn't like it. Didn't like it.
It's not the recommendation this week. If you want to see Onita explode, just listen to last week's episode and watch all the matches.
Yeah. This is more so for you to see.
You can watch one that's filmed by a private eye, and it's a really fun time.
Anyways, let's go to break so I can talk about Kenta Kobashi.
Let's go to break. When we get back, a match against Kenta Kobashi. Back from the break, and we'll dive right into it. It's New Japan Ultimate Crush on May 2nd, 2003. It's the GHC Heavyweight Championship match. It's Kenta Kobashi versus Masahiro Chono.
This is not my recommendation for the week because I said it was going to be that tag match because of more than just wrestling. But this is, without a doubt in my mind, the best match of the week.
Chono has dyed blonde hair and is a fucking vibe.
Chono's just reason I was okay with it, just watching the whole thing. Because Kenta Kobashi, even though he's post knee injury and like low key a little washed and all this other stuff, and like getting up there in age, he's not as motivated as a wrestler. All this, you know, we covered all of this in the Kobashi episode. The motherfucker is still one of the best wrestlers in the world.
I wrote much older Kenta Kobashi, but still a goat. Like,
it's like LeBron this like past few years with the Lakers.
Yeah, specifically this year, like LeBron, just like he isn't the LeBron athletically that we're used to, but he's still like the smartest basketball player in the world.
Yeah, he's 39, or is he? Yeah, he's 39 years old now. His birthday just happened the other day. But like, still putting up his 26-7-7. You know.
So I'm really interested in what you think of this match and why it's the best match.
I just think that they went out there and just fucking killed it. Like, this is Kobashi. I don't know. There's just like an intensity that they're able to bring out of each other because nobody knows how to turn a fight into a fight.
Yeah.
Like Kenta Kobashi does. And Chono is one of the best strikers I have ever seen in the wrestling ring. So just those two going at it. Chono's a great seller, too. That's an underrated aspect of him that we haven't really touched on yet. He is really, really good at selling. Yeah. And anybody selling for Kenta Kobashi is a great deal. And Kenta Kobashi is, again, honestly, arguably the greatest pro wrestler of all time.
So that makes it easy to have a good match. The other thing that I think some people might be a little like, huh, is Kobashi famously is All Japan and then Pro Wrestling Noah. And you're like, well, this is like you said, Chono's in New Japan. Well, Chono is in Noah for a handful of matches in 2002, 2003. A couple other things that we kind of skipped over that Chono did between the Onita match. Obviously, he was in like the NWO, then it folded. He also had a fourth G1 Climax win in 2002. He had a feud with China, which was interesting. He had a Chono-China feud. And he became a booker for New Japan around this time, around the turn of the new millennium. And then, like I said, he joins in 2003 for Pro Wrestling Noah to have a couple matches, including this one against Kobashi, and another one where he loses to Hulk Hogan later in the year. Yeah, obligatory fuck Hulk Hogan, but that's a match that exists, is Chono versus Hogan in 2003.
What the fuck?
Very weird, right? A very weird time. All right. Another okay. match that going beat by beat is going to be crazy.
No, no way. There's a great delayed vertical suplex by Kobashi pretty early on.
He's holding him forever.
Forever. It's like Bobby Lashley when he had that feud with Sami Zayn, and he's just like holding him there. Just.
I was expecting him to start doing squats. I was like, fuck, he's gonna start squatting this man.
They're taking their time with this one. That's one of my notes here. Like, they were really building up this match, which I fucking love. There's nothing better than a Kenta Kobashi like slow burn match.
The first 3.5 minutes of this match are going forehead to forehead and then slapping each other on the chest. That's the first 3.5 to 4 minutes of this whole match is just a chop fight.
And I was here for it because, again, Chono is a freaking elite striker and Kobashi's one of the best to ever do it. So
Kobashi clearly has the stronger shots.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like going from who's got to, it's like Gunther's obviously the number one, but who else has great chops?
Sheamus has good chops.
Yeah, it's like when they're going at each other, it's like, okay, you've got the best to do it. And then you've also got Sheamus, who's got great chops. You know?
Funnily enough, I had some coworkers today who were asking about like some wrestling stuff, and one of the things I showed them was a Gunther chop compilation of just 2 minutes of him caving in chests. And I was like, this is what wrestling's like.
Just
what do the five fingers say to your tits? That's what Gunther says every day. Gunther is Charlie Murphy for a new generation. So after the slap fight, the longest thing, like the delayed vertical suplex, is like the only big spot for a while. Like they trade a couple of holds. There's some like escaping from each other's headlocks, things like that. And then one of the first big things too is a low blow by Chono that the ref misses. That gives him his first real big opening in the whole match. And we're like 8.5 minutes in.
Yeah. A little after that, Chono hits a bunch of inverted DDTs for a near fall. Kobashi does like the full body lariat. Is, I don't know how to really do it. It's like a leaping lariat where he's just like,
it's his whole self.
He does the machine gun chops in the corner. I know a favorite of yours.
They're just funny because like they
and they're so loud. Like it's not like Eddie Kingston. This is not a knock on Eddie. I love Eddie Kingston, but Eddie does it and it's just like he's like lightly tapping the guy.
He's a cat pawing at the door.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Kobashi's doing rapid fire, but he's getting fucking sound on every single one of them.
You know, Kenta Kobashi would absolutely murder the cup song from Pitch Perfect.
What is it? When I'm gone.
Yeah. And so every time he would do the tap on the cup, it would just shatter. Just make it explode.
What do you think is like the worst situation where you would want Kenta Kobashi around? Is it like a bar game where you have to like slap the table or some shit like that?
Some people play quarters where you have to slap the quarter down. So like that could be part of it. I had a friend actually try to stop a quarter from spinning once, and she shattered a shot glass with her bare hand. And we all kind of froze. And we were like, oh shit, like we're taking her to the hospital.
Okay.
She raised her hand. Nothing on it. Shattered. What? Shattered glass, and we were like, are you unbreakable?
Are you Bruce Willis?
Are you Bruce Willis?
Chono, it's a back suplex.
The answer to your question, by the way, is playing patty cake, because you'll end up in the next fucking room. You're like, all right, Kenta, patty cake.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah, essentially.
Back suplex by Chono. Another one. Kobashi's just no-selling. He gets up. A fourth one, which just right on his fucking head.
I will say, Kobashi takes a long time to sell things in this match. He's not being very, playing ball the way Chono's playing ball in this match.
Listen, this is a New Japan show, but he's still got to get his shit in.
I will say he does sell really well by the end of the match, like the cumulative everything. But early on, he's kind of like, no, I'm still good.
Well, I just think post-knee injury, Kobashi was also like that, where he's kind of in his Superman phase.
That's fair.
He's not selling as much as, like, it's just kind of like a wear and tear over time. He'll start selling more and
more.
I get that. Especially, I mean, the Joe match is just like that. A fourth one, STF. Kobashi gets out of it eventually. Kobashi hits his half and half suplex, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
It's so good.
I love it. Massive right hand. Chono is down. And honestly, I think Chono might have actually gotten knocked down.
I would love to learn if he did or not. Yeah. It was huge. We get a back suplex by Chono. STF gets locked in. Looks real good.
It looks good every time.
They trade headbutts, which these are two men who I would not want to take headbutts from. Are you fucking kidding me?
Is there anyone that you would want to take headbutts from?
If you had to take a headbutt from somebody, an active wrestler currently, who would you take a headbutt from? I genuinely don't think Darby Allin would hurt me that much.
No, because he's crazy, so he'll just go as hard as he possibly can. Who is some... Ryan Nemeth.
Akira Tozawa.
No, Akira's Japanese. He's going in.
I don't think he'd hurt me. I think he's a gentle
Ryan
soul.
Nemeth, because he doesn't want to mess up his beauty.
Oh, true. Anybody with like a really pretty face. That's a good
idea.
Yeah, that
isn't like known for that. Like Mariah May, very beautiful woman. I feel like she'd take my fucking head off with a headbutt.
There's a point to this, I promise. I'm reading the oral history of the show The OC right now. And they're talking about Josh Schwartz, the creator of the OC, is talking about how he was once out with Adam Brody right when the show had started getting popular. And Adam Brody almost got in a fight. And Josh Schwartz stepped between the guy and Adam Brody because he was like, I need his face to be perfect for television. I don't need my face to look good. So he steps between them. Turns out they were getting punked by Benjamin McKenzie. Like, it was for the show punked, and Josh Schwartz wasn't told. And Ben, when asked, like, why didn't you tell me, I would have gone along with it, Ben said, like, you're a great writer, but a terrible actor.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's why you're right, baby. That's why you're right.
Turnbuckle bomb by Kobashi.
Does the buckle bomb freak you out when you see people do it now?
Yeah. It's
just in my brain that, like, that hurts people.
Here's the thing, though. It's just like, I feel like after what happened with Sting and then Balor, I feel like people are more so mindful of the way that they're like grabbing and stuff. And I think that moves where you are more mindful about how you have to position and all this stuff. Like, generally, I think that that has a tendency of going like more bad than it should. I know that doesn't make any sense because you're thinking about it but like, I think that, like, you know, suplexes, power bombs, like these moves that you take without really thinking about it because it's just like muscle memory, like those tend to be like the safer ones. Like, who gets hurt on suplexes? Like, barely anybody, all this other stuff. Whereas like a move where you really, like, you have to think about the execution of it, like pile drivers, fucking,
yeah, that's fair,
buckle bombs, like I feel like if you're overthinking it, that's where the injuries really do tend to happen. It gives me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies, but honestly, I think Japan is fine because they've just got the big turnbuckle pad there, so it's like, oh, you're good.
So somebody's on the ropes with a towel for Chono, who waves them off. We then get
lifeless, man.
A bunch of suplexes to Chono.
It's a lot of half and halves, man. A lot of fucking half and halves.
Chono tries to lock in an octopus stretch for a second. Kobashi immediately escapes. It's another half and half. Lariat from Kobashi, another. He gets the pinfall. Obviously, Chono's not going over on Kenta Kobashi for the GHC Heavyweight Championship. We know that.
That last lariat was brutal.
It's one of my favorites I've seen in a while. I feel like we haven't had people who have like huge lariats in a while in the pod, and that's like one of our staples. My red stapler. Have you seen my red stapler? That's a shout out for anyone who's seen Office Space. Great fucking movie. All right. Early 2004, Chono became the leader of the Black New Japan stable, which was the most dominating heel stable in New Japan at the time, until it was disbanded by Riki Choshu. As a reaction to this, Chono led an anti-Choshu army with Hiroshi Tenzan and Black Strong Machine. Chono won the G1 in 2005 as well, getting his record.
Of course he did.
Five G1 victories. September 24th, a guy comes back from excursion. This young man, Shinsuke Nakamura, who joins the Black New Japan faction, and the goal for Chono was to reform New Japan with Chono as president and Nakamura as the ace. That leads to the G1 tag final in 2006. It's Chono and Nakamura versus Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kanemoto. Tanahashi, the current president of things at New Japan, president of personnel?
No, like he's just the president.
He's just the straight up president?
Yeah, he's the president of New Japan. Jesus. He's the boss man. I feel like this is just a thing that New Japan does. I mean, it happened with Chono. Like, somehow the ace, the top guy, the one of the faces just ends up being the booker man. So in about 10 years, when Kazuchika Okada is running things over there in New Japan, it's going to be a fun time.
I was like, when Toru Yano has the book?
All right, well... It's not going to be Ishii, I can tell you that.
Giant Bernard and Tyson Tomko are in the corner of Chono and Nakamura, and it becomes weird.
That bothered me.
It can be really weird because you hear Giant Bernard just yelling things in English the whole match. It's very weird.
This match is very, like, I love this match for one reason and one reason only. Koji Kanemoto fucking won me over this match.
I don't know who he reminds me of. But I like him a lot. Ibushi.
He reminds you of Kota Ibushi. The kicks.
It is Kota Ibushi, isn't it?
It's the kicks, and it's kind of the look. Like, he just has the Kota Ibushi kicks. He doesn't have, like, the... Like, Kota kicks people, like, legitimately. But
it's obviously the athleticism is not the same, and the look is not the same either, but there are parts of it, specifically kicks. He reminds me of Rob Van Dam.
The kicks,
the flexibility, some of the moves he hits.
He's very bendy.
Yeah, Rob Van Dam is kind of the comp if you're trying to get like out of Japan for a comp for once.
I would say it's like a safe Kota Ibushi, personally. But yeah, no, I do see the RVD comp. Yeah, Kanemoto explodes with strikes pretty early on. Chono gets the advantage back and then spits on him.
Yeah. Also, Chono, I would be spitting on people too if I was. Just the way he's balding is it's in spots. It's the top, it's the back, and then it's also like clearly the sides. And I'm like, hold on, brother.
How are you on the sides? How are you going?
Like, how does it bald on the sides?
Yeah, isn't that like the one spot it stays?
Historically, yes.
I don't know how baldness works. I don't really like. My dad and my grandfather.
Ask me in like 3 years, brother. I'll tell you all about it.
Nah, you're good. You're holding strong.
Hold the line.
You have had the same line pretty much your entire life.
I have. Baby photos are weird, man. All right. Again, to go through this bit by bit would be a lot.
That's a lot.
Talk about the reasons Kanemoto won you over, and then let's talk about Chono in this match.
It was the kicks. It's the mannerisms. Again, you reminded me so much of Kota Ibushi, and I fucking love Kota Ibushi. So that was pretty easy for me to have happen. He's also like so good at selling, and I don't know. There's just something. I don't know if you felt the same way, but there's just something about Tanahashi in this match that I just don't like. Like for some reason, I'm actively rooting against him. You know what I mean?
You know who it reminds me of, and this is going to be a very weird comp, but I need you to stick with me. Have you ever seen clips of when One Direction gets formed on that show, like on X Factor?
Yes.
And you're like, you guys are all going to become a lot less insufferable in a little while, and I'll like you then.
It's like you guys are all trying too hard.
Yes, that's kind of how I felt about Tanahashi in this match. I was like, you're the thing I liked, like, because Nakamura nails his role. Nakamura is almost like, he's almost like Dominic Mysterio, and he's just an asshole here.
Heel Shinsuke has always been good. In New Japan, he was always good.
But he's
a
very specific, like, I'm the new young hot star, get the fuck out of my way. Like, that's very much what he's trying to do here. And Chono's Chono. He hasn't changed.
Chono's Chono. Yeah, no, I think that they were a very good fit with each other because Chono has this edge, you know, because he's just the badass of all badasses, whereas Nakamura is just fucking brutal. Everything, it's, you know, Shinsuke as a babyface was brutal. Shinsuke as a heel is even more so scary. So at one point, like, he just looks like such a badass. By the way, I know another reason why I don't like Tanahashi as much in this match. His hair. It's not the hair.
It's not the hair. It's not quite right.
It's not as All Might hair, so I don't care about whatever Tanahashi's got
this
going
is,
on.
This
there.
Is the Bulbasaur of hairs. Like, he eventually gets to the Venus. Like, this is the Bulbasaur of hairs.
Although the Tanahashi hair, low key, just kind of looks like Ivysaur, but still,
yeah, it kind of does.
Gatomoto has some great kicks after. So Shinsuke tags in. He looks like such a badass. He's absolutely a wrecking house. Gatomoto gets some great kicks looking here. And that was the point where I wrote down, like, this guy fucking kicks just like shit, or just like Kota Ibushi. Tanahashi hits a nice leaping forearm that really just kind of looks like Balor's. But those guys' move sets are so interchangeable because they basically just did the exact same things that I don't even know what to tell you. I don't know who did it first. Chono gets in the ring, causes chaos, because that's just what he is. This was chaos before chaos.
The best thing that Chono does in this match, there's two things I want to talk about. One is hitting three straight pile drivers.
Spike pile drivers.
Three straight spike pile drivers. And then another one where he's going up against Tanahashi, and I'm like, wow, like, nice little takedown. He's doing some strikes. And he just knees him in the balls. I was like... God damn it, Chono. You're so funny.
You're the best.
Chono is somebody who I feel like is really funny without trying to be funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just does things. I'm like, that's fucking hilarious.
It's like, it's a lot of the dry humor stuff. I don't know. I've been on the Brooklyn Nine-Nine kick, as you found out before the podcast. It's a lot of like the Captain Holt stuff that's just so funny. Or like the Hitchcock and Scully stuff that like it. They're just buffoons, you know,
pop dropping bodies to stick
they're up. Not meant to be funny. You know, it's like things like that, or when Charles is like unintentionally funny. And then so back to the match here. STF looks great every time. Kanemoto stops Shinsuke with just one of the cleanest kicks you'll ever see in your life. Kanemoto hits what's essentially yes kicks while Tanahashi is holding up, I think it's Nakamura. Superplex into an ankle lock with a grapevine that Shinsuke has to break up. Kanemoto hits a moonsault for a near fall, and then you get that low blow. And then we get the spot of the match. Kanemoto hits a broski boot, brother.
The broski boot. He does like the face wash a little bit with his boot, and then he backs up and just hits the broski boot.
It's great.
I love it. Not what I expected to see.
Did you see that Chelsea Green hit the Rough Rider on Monday?
I didn't, but that's very fun.
Yeah, she hit the Rough Rider. It was great. Is Matt Cardona coming back at the Rumble 11?
I'll pop for Zack Ryder.
I'll pop for it. I love it. Yeah. Love Zack Ryder.
The other names I've heard, aside from like people who are injured, like I've heard like Big E and Liv Morgan, things like that. I heard X-Pac coming back at the Rumble.
Ooh.
Honestly, come back as the 1-2-3 kid. I'd pop.
Come back as Six.
If the NWO music comes on and Six comes out, people would riot.
People break it down.
If the NWO music comes on and everyone's like, Kevin Nash is here, Hulk Hogan's here. Like, who's the worst NWO member who could come out?
There Vincent, were so many.
Good answer.
Virgil.
It's Virgil. It's definitely Virgil.
No. Here's the thing, though. There were so many, though. Like, is it Bischoff? It's Bischoff.
I think the funniest thing in the world would be to play the NWO music and have Virgil come out. I think that is peak comedy.
But, like, here's the thing. It has to be the X Factor song. Because otherwise... Like, you hit DX's music and we're like, oh, my God, Triple H or Shawn. Let's go.
Maybe
something
Road
like
Dog.
That, right? Maybe Road Dog. Billy God. But no, we get X-Pac. Like, if you hit the NWO music, oh my God, we're going to get one of the NWO guys. Oh, it's X-Pac.
I think it'd be very funny, given the Judgment Day storyline, to have NWO music hit and R-Truth comes out and he's like, this is our group, right? I think that'd be very fun.
Have you been seeing all the like pictures?
They're so funny.
Shout out to Nick Mysterio.
Tom and Nick Mysterio. Don't get it twisted. Don't forget Tom. Yeah. So, yes, there's the broski boot. Jump kick catches a bus from Nakamura. Drop kicks by both men to Nakamura in the corner. And a double drop kick to him coming off the ropes. Nakamura kicks out of a pin and into an armbar on Kanemoto. Tanahashi breaks it up. Nakamura with a suplex Tanahashi and a one to Kanemoto for a two count. A surprise roll-up almost gets Nakamura. I thought that was the end of the match, even though I knew.
Yeah, that was a clean, small package, too. Yeah. Shout out Kanemoto.
What is the move that Nakamura hits at the end?
So Chono's, like, choking Tanahashi on the apron.
He's attempting and murder.
Nakamura honestly hits basically a one-winged angel.
That's okay, because I was like, it's not a one-winged angel, but it's the
but
close. It's close.
It's essentially, it's the fucking, what's it called?
You know how you could used to be able to do the move blender sometimes on WWE? Or like, if you took the rotation of the F5, but instead it lands like a one-winged angel, that's what it is.
Well, that's just, it's an FU into, it's a DVD into, but forward.
But
whatever that is.
But there's a little bit of that Brock Lesnar spinning, because Brock Lesnar fucking yeets people.
Well, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Brock Lesnar and Shinsuke Nakamura had a match in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, and Brock Lesnar is a gorilla who's masquerading as a human. So they get the win. They win the G1 Tag League. Very exciting. Chono would be with New Japan until 2010 when he left New Japan to become a freelancer, went all around, did a bunch of different things. In 2022, Chono discussed how Kaji Muda requested to have his retirement match with him, but wasn't sure if he could compete. But then on February 21st of last year, Chono was challenged to an impromptu match by Muda during Muda's retirement show at the Tokyo Dome, which Chono won and then announced his own retirement following the match. So Chono went out against Muda. His first match in New Japan was against Chono. His last match was against Chono.
It's great. It's a beautiful story. I mean, it lasted all of 2 seconds, pretty much.
But still, nice to Chono and Muda. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You knew Chono before, so I'm going to go first in the one that I learned. This guy rules. That's a pretty easy.
He's so cool.
He's very cool. The talent's very much there. Of the three Musketeers that we have seen, I think he's second on my list. I think Muto's last.
Wow. Okay.
I fucking love Shinya Hashimoto. That's my guy.
I knew Hashimoto.
That's my guy. But I think Chono, I think I appreciate the little things he does, the intensity he brings to it. There's very much like a cerebral assassin type thing that I see within him. Muto,
it's weird. He's just like a blend of like the Steiners, like pretty much any of them, even freaking Braun. Any of them, like. The Nakamura, like, Japanese brawler kind, and then just also, like, fucking Diesel, just because he's so cool.
Yeah.
He's
got
like a blend
lot.
Of all
he's
three
got
of
a lot
guys.
Going to him, and he could do a lot of different styles. Like, we could see, obviously, he did the Exploding Death Match. He works tag, like, a lot of good stuff. Also, to be such a focal point in the company for that long and always be somebody who is in the mix is worth something. Like, it's worth it to, like, you know, he was there for over 20 years. Like, he was a focal point in New Japan for that long. You got to give him props for that.
Yes. Yes, you absolutely do. He's great. I cannot say many more good things about Chono. Again, we just didn't. I wanted to spread out his career. He's got a long career, so I didn't get enough of his prime in there. But those the from like 93 to about 96, he is almost untouchable. As a performer, you know, in New Japan, you know, we've got to preface that because that's a pretty that those are really competitive years for wrestling. As far as even Japanese wrestling with what's going on over there in All Japan, but his prime years were so good. Again, he's a guy who's won 5 G1s. Like
that's something
that only Okada's won 5. Now that I think about it, but Okada is the only guy that even comes close. And if you're compared to arguably the best Japanese wrestler New Japan Pro Wrestling's ever had, congratulations! Honestly, congratulations, because Okada is just the guy. He is.
Okada has 4.
He's got 4. Okay, so he's one away. And he He's gonna break it. I can just promise you that. Short of career-ending injury, he's gonna break it.
But if you're wondering, in terms of the other tournaments, Inoki has 10, but this wasn't the G1 then.
Yeah, but he was also the booker man slash owner slash Antonio Inoki. So
yeah, when the only other people who won the tournament during his time were Saiji Sakaguchi, Andre the Giant, and Hulk Hogan. So
he won because he wanted to win. He didn't let himself get pinned for like 20 fucking years or some shit like that. What are we doing here?
It's a bit much. All right. Next week on Japanuary, we're going to wrap up Japanuary in a big way. Next week, we finally dive into the career of Mayu Iwatani, one of the outstanding women wrestlers of our time. I'm very excited. This is one of Javier's personal favorites.
Yes, the of stardom, the legend of stardom.
Truly. So we're going to see some Io Shirai. We're going to see some Julia. We're going to see some Mercedes Moné. All of that as we cover Mayu Iwatani. Hey, you might have noticed this was episode 198. What are we doing for our 200th episode? We're going to do a Q&A as well as revisit Eddie Guerrero, who's the topic of our first ever episode so many moons ago. So we're going to cover three of the matches we already covered for Eddie Guerrero, as well as a Q&A. Hit us up on Instagram, on Twitter, with some questions for our Q&A. We're going to have some prompts in our Instagram stories. You can just DM us on Twitter. You can tweet at us, whatever you want to do, at Crossbody of Work. You'd also leave them in the comment section of this video right now on YouTube, at Crossbody of Work. Hit subscribe while you're here. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the Twitter machine at JMello Sports. I swear to God, there will be a sign one day. There will
be. Episode 200, there will be a sign. Also, you should follow me on Twitter at It's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. FullPressShop.com. Cop the merch, support the boys. Full Press Wrestling for all of the links to all the matches this week and every week when we do the podcast. The other thing to note, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be debuting a brand new look for the podcast. So you may see it in your Spotify feed, your Apple Podcast feed, that it looks a little different. It's still us. It's still the same content. We're still full of shit. Have a great time. It just looks a little different. We're throwing things back
just a wee bit.
Very excited because it's also going to be new merch. So fullpressshop.com for some new merch in the near future.
So keep an eye out on this stuff because it's still there too.
It's still there too. Get all that good stuff. Thank you for listening. It's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, I watched Iron Claw last night, Evan.
Yes, and it was very good.
It is a very good movie. I cannot recommend it enough to people. We're all wrestling fans here. We did a Von Erich's episode. We know what's up. We know what's happening. It still fucking is a gut punch. And this week's life advice is honestly like, look, man, watching that movie, there were five brothers. And, you know, there were five brothers and then there was just Kevin. And honestly, just like.
We've never done a Von Erich episode.
We haven't?
We did the Freebirds. That's what you're thinking of.
Oh, my God. No. Yes, because. Wait, we did a Fritz Von Erich retirement match. Is that against the Freebirds?
That's an entirely different thing. He has his retirement match against somebody. I'm going to look it up, but he has his retirement match against somebody else that we're thinking of.
Oh my God. I guess they've shown up so often that I didn't even realize. But yeah, no, like the Von Erichs, it's wrestling's tragedy. It's, you know, I'm not going to spoil the movie, but if you're a wrestling fan who's like in the know, if you're listening to this, I assume you're in the know. You know, we know what happens with the Von Erich family. But anyways, you know, going through the leaps and bounds with that family, seeing the buildup of brotherhood and all this other stuff, it's just one of those deals where, you know, I get out of that theater and I immediately started thinking about my brother. And I was just like, that is a bond that is just like, it's just me and my brother. Like, he's my only sibling, all this stuff. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, that is, you don't have to be best friends with that person. I know a lot of people, like, are. But you don't have to be best friends with that person. There's just this, like, natural camaraderie that I feel like, you know, most people, if we're lucky enough, have with our brothers. Evan, I know you've got three. I'm sure you feel the exact same way.
I love them.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, you know, even if you Like, I haven't talked to my brother, texted him in a while. It's been probably a week or two. So it's just like, hey, you know, love you, man. And it's one of those things where, like, I think it really will affect you if you're just like a guy watching that and you have a brother. Cause it's one of those things where, like, yeah, like that's
brotherhood.
That was awesome. That's great. And then it's just like, fuck.
Also, it's probably going to really connect with you if you have a bad dad. But that'll connect in a whole different way. Fritz Von Erich was in the King Kong Bundy episode. Bundy had his retirement match.
It's crazy. Anyways,
episode 176. Like, go listen to that.
The point to put a bow on it all, life advice this week. One, go watch Iron Claw. It's a terrific movie. Support it. It's an independent film. It's A24, who they're an independent studio. They're one of the bigger ones, but they're still an independent studio. You know, go watch it. It's great. Zac Efron is fucking fantastic as Kevin Von Erich. But also, like, yeah, if you're a guy reading this or listening to this and you have a brother, just fucking text your brother, tell him you love him, all this stuff. Like, you just never know, you know.
Just appreciate
that bond that you guys have. Just even if you don't have that bond, just fuck it, text him anyways. Be like, hey, love you, man.
And
just do it.
Try to win the tag titles with your brother. It sounds like a fun thing to do.
Bring me the world title.
Bring me pictures of Spider-Man. All right, that's gonna wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us as we continued on in Japanuary. We got one more episode, Mayu Iwatani, right before episode 200. We will see you again next week.
Yakuza.